prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
But this episode, we're taking a break from just talking about one movie. We had an extra Tuesday this month, so we thought it'd be fun to do another Blu-ray wish list episode.
Yeah, excited. Our last one was a lot of fun with John.
Yes.
So,
And I mentioned it in our last episode that we have gotten at least one of those picks has gotten a Blu-ray release, Evil Dead Trap.
Right.
Did you check on Night Flyer to see?
I didn't check.
God, man. All right.
That's fine. I don't think it did actually get a Blu-ray release. Okay. I think you're right.
I think you just, wished it did. Like, I wished all mine got Blu-ray.
Yeah. I mean, in my dreams, they're all out in the world.
I know. Someday. We're going to put a few more out into the universe and hope that they get a Blu-ray release. Like our last Blu-ray episode where we had a guest, John from Twitch of the Death Nerve, we wanted to bring on another guest to share some picks. And so joining us for this episode, we have Dustin from the Genre Exposure Podcast.
Welcome, Dustin.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm super happy to be here.
So, Dustin, Genre Exposure, one of my favorite podcasts.
Means so much. Unsung Horrors is one of my favorites, so.
Thank you so much. What I love about Genre Exposure is that you guys are all very thoughtful about what you're talking about, but you balance it very well with humor, and you also cover a really wide variety of films.
Thank you. That's high praise, so it means a lot.
Of course. So you want to, just for listeners, tell folks maybe a little bit more about the podcast and maybe even like just touch on a few of the movies that you guys have covered so far?
All right, sure. It actually started as a movie club, and we would kind of do what the podcast is just with no formality to it at all. And at some point we decided, like, let's just hammer this down, actually commit ourselves to recording and just like promote these films we love that sometimes not a lot of people are checking out. Core of it is we kind of will pick a topic, and it'll be either a certain genre, maybe a type of movie, maybe a theme. And there's three of us. We'll each curate a pick for that topic, and we'll go one by one and just do like super deep dive, fully walk through the plot, discuss everything we think about it, stuff we love, stuff we didn't care for, just the works. Right now we're working on a series for anthology films.
Oh,
it's going to be super fun.
We do like horror anthologies.
Yeah. Haven't picked one for one of our episodes, and I've thought about it.
There's most of them have over 1,000 views, and the ones that don't aren't very good. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, at least in my opinion, but that's all that matters, right?
They're all good in mine.
I know. All right, so we're going to kick things off here with our Blu-ray picks. So just kind of a format, we're not going to really be spoiling these movies very much. We're just going to give a quick overview of the films. If we know where they're available now, we can potentially share that. But one thing that I really like to do, at least, is, if we're putting it out there, I want a Blu-ray of this, take it another step further and say, well, which label should release it? And like, what kind of special features would you want to see with it? So hopefully folks will discover some new movies from this and also add to our Blu-ray wishlist energy and putting that out in the world and making it happen. So, all right. So Dustin, you're our guest. Why don't you kick us off with your first pick?
All right. Well, true to me, I have a lot of Asian stuff on my wish list, so I'm going to start with one of those.
Nice.
So for my first one, I've got A Cult from 2009, directed by Koji Shiraishi. He's pretty much a legend, I think, for found footage stuff in J-horror. But the synopsis for this one, Shiraishi plays himself as a documentarian interested in the strange, indiscriminate murder that occurred at a sightseeing resort. He goes behind the camera to investigate the circumstances surrounding this incident and to also interview the survivors. Very simple hook, very simple setup. But that's like to his style. He's so good at making these like just crazy documentary things where they start so calm and so just like, you could see this on any TV channel, but then as it advances, it slowly kind of spirals out of control. This one almost goes in like a Man Bites Dog scenario where he starts to like follow one of the particular survivors, and he really starts to have to like question how far he's going to go to keep like chronicling the story.
Okay. Yeah. I just watched Man Bites Dog recently. So this,
nice.
This is clicking for me. All right.
I mean, to me, he's like kind of an undersung legend, I think, of J horror stuff. He's done a ton of found footage stuff. If you love Shudder, you've probably seen Noroi. It's on there. He does a lot of found footage. He does a lot of like just low budget stuff. He did like Teke Teke, the Carved film. And more recently, he's done like studio stuff like the Ring versus the Grudge film. And he adapted the Hellgirl anime into live action.
Okay. I didn't know there was a Ring versus Grudge movie.
It's terrible, but it's like in a cheesy, fun way. So,
okay. Yeah, I think it was at Fantastic Fest 1 year.
Was it?
I feel like
I probably skipped that on purpose. No.
Releases of this, I actually don't think there's any at all. I've searched and searched, and there's not even like a DVD or anything. I guess it screened at some festivals. You can find it on YouTube very often if you don't care to go hunting. As far as a release, like a wish release for this, I kind of wanted to show some love to Third Window Films. They come up a little less often, I think, in the discussion, even though they've been around a while. They're very focused on Asian cinema and especially Japanese cinema. And they kind of do this style I really like, where they'll very much like pick a director and sort of focus on them. So when I think a lot of my favorite Japanese directors like Shion Sono, Shinya Tsukamoto, Toshiaki Toyoda, they really like, they'll pick them and just like film after film, all in the same consistent quality, get those out. And since so many of Shiraishi's stuff is like not out there, I think it would be great if they started with a film like Occult to sort of like dip their toe in there and then just like get all his other stuff out there.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
As far as special features, I think anything where they could interview Shiraishi himself or have him give commentary on the film would be awesome. To me, he is like top tier when it comes to doing found footage horror. So I think anything where he could share his process, or even a lot of his found footage stuff, he is the main character as well as the cameraman. And I'm sure it's hard to like juggle that with everything else. So I think any insight from him would be awesome.
Nice. Okay. So for my first pick, I am going with a 1974 film called, well, it's got like three different names. So it's either Shadow Man, The Man Without a Face, or Nuits Rouges. It was a French film directed by Georges Franju. He also directed Eyes Without a Face. So that would be the most familiar film to most folks.
Oh, nice.
So this is about a man in a red mask. A lot of people have probably seen like the key art for this. He wears a lot of other disguises too. But he murders a collector named De Borrejo in order to find elements which will lead him to the legendary treasure of the Knights Templar. So I went into this one blind. I watched it simply because I saw who the director was, I saw the poster, and I was like, I want to watch this. But this one completely blew me away. It's a pulpy spy thriller. It's very colorful and silly, but it also gets extremely dark at times, and it has a pretty high body count. And it even has a group of these zombie-like henchmen in it. So I don't want to give too much away about this because I had so much fun watching this without really knowing anything about it ahead of time. If this had, you know, any kind of availability, this is something I would actually love to cover on the show, like give it its own episode, but it really doesn't. And I think when it gets a release, it'll probably skyrocket past 1,000 views. Right now, there's only an out-of-print DVD, or it's actually a double DVD with Judex, which is another one of the director's films. So for now, Legal Adjacent's really the only way to watch this one. So sorry, folks. As far as a label, honestly, I mean, Criterion already put out Eyes Without a Face and Judex, so that could be an easy pick for it. But I also think just because of how different this film is from that, well, it's kind of similar to Judex. But I think Severin could tackle this one as well. As far as extras, I'd like, you know, an interview with Gail Honeycutt, who stars in it. She's like the la femme in it, and she's kind of like the female sidekick, and she's got this cute little like cat burglar set piece in it that's really fun. And also a video essay by Robin Walls, who runs the Fantamos website. And this film was very much in the spirit of the films of Louis Felide. Yeah, Nuits Rouge, Shadow Man, Man Without a Face, 1974 is my first pick. Lance.
Okay, my pick, my first pick, Super Silly.
Okay.
I mean, y'all are great. All of ours will be great, but I'm going to go with an original made-for-TV movie from 1985.
Okay.
The Midnight Hour.
Mm.
Spirits of darkness, I command you to rise from your graves. I implore your release from eternal torment.
Tonight's the night.
Demons, arise. Arise.
Halloween night.
Look out, it's the midnight hour, baby!
Devil is going on here.
Lucinda brought a terrible curse on the town.
The time is right.
All the legendary demons of hell were loosed.
And the spirits are restless.
Everyone who dies this night will walk again.
The ancient demons will rise tonight.
And all who are touched by evil will become evil forever.
To share their wrath.
The dead are coming back to life, and some of the dead are apt to kill.
I don't like the sound of this.
And claim their victims.
Don't come another step closer!
You can't beat us.
I'm going right to the midnight hour. Midnight Hour.
So this aired on ABC in 85. It was directed by Jack Bender, probably best known for Child's Play 3. It did get a limited Anchor Bay DVD release in 2000 with just the movie, no special features. People are, you know, selling it, flipping it on eBay for like hundreds of dollars. It's nuts. So it deserves a Blu-ray release because I feel like the special features for this has the potential to be completely stacked. Also, it's on YouTube right now.
I think that's where I watched it just last year recently, actually.
Yeah. So The Midnight Hour is about these high school students who unknowingly raise the dead on Halloween night, right before a big costume party. Mm-hmm. You know me and
you love those.
Yes. Whenever they're in a film, it's you know it's a 5-star movie. Nice. So there's these zombies kind of walking around the town, this town of Pitchford Cove, and it's Halloween, so they're all blending in, attending the party. Wolfman Jack plays a DJ.
Yeah, he does.
So throughout the night, he's introducing songs and adding like these Halloween themed commentary, like. Look out, it's the midnight hour, baby.
Waiting for it.
Oh, I love Wolfman Jack's voice. I mean, very lighthearted Halloween movie. Something fun that I see a lot of people every year on Letterboxd just logging every October. Yeah. Seems to be, you know, a nostalgic favorite for a lot of people. Certainly a product of its time. You know, networks don't really make movies like this.
No.
Original seasonal movies like this. But this one's really well presented because of the great practical effects, the makeup, very Michael Jackson Thriller looking. It looks everything's just really well done. The zombie makeup, especially, you know, going back on the Thriller thing, though, there is this dance sequence with the zombies, with vampires. There's a really creepy looking werewolf. There's a little person zombie, which he steals scenes.
Yeah.
It's just great. If you ever wanted to see LeVar Burton as a vampire, this is your chance. He plays one of the high school kids. And it stars.
I'm sold on this.
Yeah. Oh, you got to see it, Dustin. It's on YouTube, like I said. But Sherry Belafonte is the lead, and she's amazing in this. Beautiful. She played, you know, I'm not spoiling anything. You could see everything just pretty much on the box cover art. She plays a vampire, and she actually sings an original song called Get Dead. Again, original songs in horror movies or any movies, I'm sold. Throw in a Halloween costume party. I want it on Blu-ray. So the whole soundtrack, super catchy. So I know a lot of Blu-ray releases will include like the CD or the soundtrack, or at least a digital download. I could see that being included with Midnight Hour. But I would love to see, you know, special features with obviously cast and crew interviews, some audio commentary from Jack Bender, the director, and you know, all the cast, I think all of whom are still living, which is good.
For now.
With the concentration, like special features, with the concentration on the special effects and makeup teams, because like I said, this looks like some of the set designs, like the cemetery, are pretty rough, but sure. The makeup and special effects are really great. I want to learn more about the team that worked on this. Yeah, as far as a label, a distributor, maybe Shout Factory could tackle something like
this. Yeah, I think that's a good
fit. Sounds like one for them.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, they usually, their special features really do have a heavy focus on the special effects and makeup. Mm-hmm. So I think it would work with Shout Factory. But The Midnight Hour.
Awesome.
All right, Dustin, your second pick.
All right, well, another thing I love is giallo, and I feel like there's this, most of the big stuff's been covered, but there's this one low-hanging fruit that someone needs to get out, and that is The House with Laughing Windows from 1976, directed by Pupi Avati. Yes.
Love Pupi. Love him.
Great director. I love Zetter, which does have a Blu-ray release. I know that one's not too highly regarded, but
I love that one. I don't know who these people are that are like, oh, it's slow and boring. Get the fuck out of here. That movie is great.
So this one, a young restorer is commissioned to save a fresco representing the suffering of Saint Sebastiano, which was painted on the wall of a local church by a mysterious long-dead artist. It's got all the good giallo stuff you love. It kind of mixes in a lot of like very slow burn psychological horror, which I think really a lot of Avati's stuff, he always has that slow burn thing going on.
Yeah.
It's got the rural setting, kind of like Don't Torture a Duckling. And I always love that when any giallo will take like another section besides just like metropolitan high life and couch all their tropes in that. Because of that, you've got like very suspicious, strange local villagers going on, a little bit of like a folk horror vibe almost. And it's got that crazy twist like every giallo, but I think if you stack them up, this is like one of the all-time craziest final twists.
Yeah.
And especially if you can go in blind, like you'll just be left stunned in the aftermath. Currently, I think there's a DVD from Shameless Screen Entertainment. It's still in stock, but they were in like the double digits on that. So I don't know. For a release, I'm thinking probably Severin Films. They dabble with giallo from time to time. And I feel like every time they do one, it's always like something special or there's something like very unique about it. And so I think this one in particular would be perfect for them. Special features. I wasn't 100% on who's still around they could interview, but I think it would be awesome if they had like maybe a video essay that just talked about giallo in particular and times where they've like blended in with other genres. Because I think of another favorite of mine, The Red Queen Kills Seven Times, and that one kind of blends gothic horror with giallo. So kind of just an overview of those like next tier out giallo that do a little weird with their like genre blending. I think that would be awesome.
I have the Shameless DVD, and I when you said this title, I actually had to think about it. I was like, oh shit, that's right. This doesn't have a Blu-ray yet.
Yeah, I search all the time for news, but it's never out there.
Yeah,
it's very
strange. I don't know if there's maybe like getting the prints a problem or what, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know, but the director, Pupi Avati, is still alive. So I feel like now's the time to hopefully pull the trigger on that. And I feel bad. I'm trying to remember the name of it. If I remember it, I'll put it in. If I can find it and remember it, I'll put it in show notes. But I watched a Miskatonic Institute lecture last year or the year before, I think. And the guy who gave it talked about different sort of subgenres within giallo, and specifically like the metropolitan, the rural one, and also one that I didn't really think about as a subgenre, but he gave some examples and I was like, oh shit, that totally fits, is this war trauma giallo. Oh. So there's ones like Hotel Fear, Pensione Para, and a few others I can't think of off the top of my head, but I think what you're talking about for a video essay, like someone like that would be really great to.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Awesome.
All right. So my second pick, I probably should have made this my first pick to follow up after Dustin's, because this is kind of a proto found footage film. It's a 1973 film called At the Meeting with Joyous Death, AKA Expulsion of the Devil. This is directed by Juan Luis Buñuel. He is the son of famed director Luis Buñuel. So a married couple purchases a remote house in the countryside, and soon they start to witness strange apparitions and events, and their prepubescent daughter is haunted by a poltergeist, which is sort of linked to her sexual awakening. Then a bus of schoolgirls gets stranded nearby and ends up staying with them until they can get assistance. And then a TV crew actually comes to the house to record the reported haunting. So once the TV crew comes in, it kind of becomes a little bit found footage-y in that way, where, and a little bit kind of like Poltergeist, like, you know, you have Zelda come in with like her people and they're kind of recording what's happening and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But this is from 73. And so, but it feels more found footage than something like Poltergeist does, but the whole TV crew coming in and like filming like what's happening there. I'm not really a big fan of found footage films, but this one I did really enjoy because it's very dreamy and it's very sort of surrealistic. Not so much like not full like his father, like Luis Buñuel surrealistic, but mm-hmm. it has some of those elements and you can definitely tell he's his father's son in this film. I think probably Scorpion releasing or Kino would be the pick here for who would release it. They have one of Juan Luis Buñuel's other films, Leonor, already released. For now, this is on Cave of Forgotten Films, but the link on Cave of Forgotten Films, which is rarefilm2ms.com, the copy on there is from YouTube, so you could watch it on either one, really. The copy is not great. It's very... You know, it's already sort of like dreamlike and hazy, and it's not a great copy. So just, you know, bear with it if you want to watch it before it gets the release, because it will, because I'm putting it out in the world. For special features, an interview with Linda Ehrlich. So she actually edited Juan Luis Buñuel's memoir and was in frequent communication with him prior to his death in 2017. So she seems like the obvious choice for who you're going to interview to kind of get to know the director a little bit more. I'd also want to see a commentary track by Nathaniel Thompson from Mondo Digital. My only reason for that is because I saw he gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. So I'm like, he loves this movie. He can do it.
Sometimes you need that super fan to really sell it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then some interviews with cast would be awesome. Francois Fabian, she's 88, so someone's going to need to get on that. And that's assuming that she remembers anything.
There might be some archival interviews.
Maybe. So yeah, that would be my second pick, At the Meeting with Joy's Death, a.k.a. Expulsion of the Devil, 1973.
Nice.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'm going to go with this experimental docudrama called Gift, directed by Perry Farrell.
You've talked about this before. This was a double feature
pick? This was a double feature pick for Shaw Brothers' Corpse Mania.
Yes.
Ooh. So, yeah,
Perry Farrell and Casey Nicoli, they directed this. She's a filmmaker, but she directed mostly just music videos. She did the Ben Caught Stealing, Jane's Addiction video, Classic Girl. I'm a huge Jane's Addiction fan, so this is a selfish pick
for me.
it was filmed in 1990, the early 1990s, when they were making the Ritual del Habitual album, and that was released in 91. This was held on and released in 1993 on VHS. I had the VHS. I had mentioned this on our episode. I had the VHS. This is something I had played pretty much every weekend when I was like at this young, really impressionable age. I was infatuated with Perry Farrell and Jane's Addiction, and this weird experimental film just kind of heightened my whole infatuation of how artistic, you know, Farrell and Casey Nicoli were. She was kind of his muse throughout Nothing Shocking, throughout all his records. So, you know, there were a couple during those, you know, 5-year period or so. The plot's super simple. It's Perry Farrell playing himself. He comes home from the studio, finds Casey dead from a heroin overdose, and he mourns her death in his own way, calling back memories with her, maybe a little bit of necrophilia.
Hell yeah.
Which Ooh. Erica loves. You know, dressing her up, presenting her corpse kind of in this beautiful shrine before finally calling the police. It's a short little experimental film. I think it runs about 80 minutes or so, but there's a lot to unpack. It's very artistic. It does go back and forth with like live performances because that's part of the character's life. If you're a fan of Jane's Addiction, it's obviously a really intriguing watch. And it being centered around Jane's Addiction, the band, and then the LA scene in the early 90s, there's a lot of scenes, you know, of Perry Farrell, like remembering memories of walking around LA. There's a lot of potential for special features. Like I said, I could listen to Farrell talk about anything for like hours. So like an audio commentary from him and Casey Nicoli would be amazing. Input from the Jane's band members. Ice-T makes an appearance at the end of the film. So I want to hear from Ice-T about the movie and what he thought of it. Some sort of like authorized official documentary of the making of maybe Ritual del Habitual, which has never really been. There's a bunch of, you know, 40-minute little mini docs, unauthorized stuff about the album. But I think it'd be you could include a documentary on the recording of the album, because there is a lot of footage from inside the studio. Not a lot of footage, but there's some scenes in Gift. Yeah, so I could see Altered Innocence or Music Box Select releasing Gift on Blu-ray. Altered Innocence has some great releases like Sound and Fury, Equation to the Unknown, and Gift kind of would fit along with those titles, in my opinion. And if like Feral and Ecolier could somehow be involved in the artwork, the packaging, the whole presentation and special features, you know, it would just be this artistic collection of who knows what, you know, whatever they kind of throw in, because they are so kind of, I don't know, the ideas that they come up with, not just musically and in film. They do all the sculptures that's presented on all the Jane's Addiction records together. I think any type of packaging that they put together could be really, really fascinating. Even if they weren't involved, I'd buy it immediately. So Gift, Blu-ray.
Nice.
Dustin, next pick.
All right, now I'm bringing the deep cut.
Okay.
We're gonna jump to South Korea for Bloody Beach from 2000, directed by In Soo Kim. Pretty unknown director, I think. I kind of tried to track down some of his other stuff, and he's done some horror films in the 70s and 80s. A lot of it, I couldn't find like anything at all to watch or even track down and check out. So he's maybe a lost gold mine of releases, potentially. The synopsis, we've got a group of chat room buddies decide to meet together in reality at the beach for some fun in the sun. However, their vacation transforms into a nightmare as each person is murdered one by one by the mysterious person named Sandmans. And that is Sandmans with two Z's because we're in the 2000s and we're on the internet.
Nice.
So I think when we think of like South Korean horror, there's a lot of stuff that like comes to the forefront. You've got like revenge thrillers like Old Boy or I Saw the Devil. Mm-hmm. You've got the supernatural epics like The Wailing. This film is like a total outlier to all of that because it's just a straight up like love letter send up to the late 90s teen slasher in America. Like you could just take this and slot it in between like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legend and it would just play and no one's going to question anything. And it has that whole like it is the early 2000s like internet focus like a Cry Wolf or something where they're on like little chat interfaces and sending emails. Oh, and it's just completely ridiculous. But there's been a few foreign DVD releases for this. I had to track it down on eBay to watch it because I couldn't even find like any like legal adjacent stuff to check it out. I think it's not a bootleg. The subtitles are legible, so we'll see.
Okay.
I think a release for this, and it's maybe a long shot, but I'll pan this out. Vinegar Syndrome. I see they're starting to like poke into Hong Kong cinema. Mm-hmm. So I think this is maybe a vein they've not explored yet. Like, I think we all know the style of their films. Like, it's either going to be you love it and it's the greatest thing ever, or you're just like, why did this get a Blu-ray release?
Yeah.
And when I think of watching this film and even that genre it's in of like the teen slasher, like some people are going to watch this and they'll think it's the greatest thing ever. And then some people are like, why have you wasted this show's time bringing up this topic? Well, I think like you make a cool slip and throw it on this and toss it in a Black Friday sale and it's going to sell out like immediately. As far as special features, since I couldn't find a whole lot about the director, I think like maybe a video essay that sort of goes over his career and the other films he's done and maybe even include some like clips or trailers would be awesome.
Yeah, Vinegar Syndrome is... I love them. God bless Vinegar Syndrome for what they do. But man, sometimes some fucking movies. I'm just like.
One of my picks is a Vincent. Like, nice. That'll be my next one. But
I mean, yeah. I rely on you guys to tell me the good ones like Devil Story. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, they sometimes you get a Devil Story and sometimes you get a whodunit, you know, like. Mm-hmm. Fuck that movie. All right. Okay. So my next pick is a Japanese film called Blood Sword of the 99th Virgin from 1959. Yes. Okay, good. Dustin knows this one. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is directed by Morihei Magatani and is starring a very young and very sexy, as always, Bunta Sugawara. Mm-hmm. So this is a horror drama set in the mountains of the Iwate Prefecture, which is sort of this remote area that I guess you could describe as like the Ozarks of Japan. And a group of mountain folk kidnap a young girl from a local town in order to sacrifice her because they need blood of virgins in order to appease their ancestor gods. What I love about this film is it's actually really well-paced, if not fast-paced. it's sleazy for a 1950s Japanese film, and it's got great action. And I feel like it very much falls into the sort of folk horror subgenre as well, in that the modern is clashing with old beliefs and practices, and, you know, usually with a bloody result.
Definitely.
As far as who should release it, I actually, the label that you mentioned earlier, Dustin, I have Third Window as a possible one for them.
Awesome.
Arrow could potentially do this as well. They just put out one of my favorite Japanese films, I think last year, Blind Beast. So I know they dip their toes in it a little bit more. So if not Third Window, then Arrow. I'd like to see a commentary track from Tony Raines. He's done a lot of Criterion commentary tracks for nearly every country in Asian cinema. So I think he'd be well suited to tackle this one. And then a video essay from Mitsuyo Wada Marciano. She's an editor and contributor for a book called Horror to the Extreme, Changing Boundaries in Asian Cinema. So I thought she might be able to speak to the cultural context of the film, specifically the controversy about it, because the film isn't technically banned. It just hasn't been shown a lot because of the depiction of the mountain people as primitives. So
right, yeah.
I feel like she could probably add some context to that in a video essay. So I'd like to see that as a special feature as well. Yeah, Bloodsword of the 99th Virgin. This is not streaming anywhere, at least not since the last time I checked. So another, sorry, folks, legal adjacent find. Lance, your next pick.
Okay, all my picks are pretty easy to find on YouTube. Well, they're all goofy and stupid. You know, I just realized too, unlike, you know, the first Blu-ray wish list episode we did, I have no foreign films on mine. So I feel I'm annoyed with that. It is.
Oh, wow.
I had some Swedish films and Taiwanese films on the first one. This one just is just boring.
Way to go. You're getting us canceled.
Yeah. So let's just go with this one. Penitentiary 3.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. I got to have it.
You got to have it.
Too Sweet is back. And this time, he's been set up.
Where's the referee? Where's the doctor?
To take a fall, which lands him 5 more years in hell. Here, the fighting has no rules. And the only winners are losers.
It's the midnight third.
Why doesn't somebody do something?
One word, Serengeti.
I'm nobody's property.
I followed your career, Mr. Gordon.
Kiss.
Looks like we got ourselves a real pro here.
I quit fighting, sir.
Nobody says no to Serengeti.
Now, he is forced to fight for his life with the devil himself.
Just when he's not to come out of that ring. He is dead meat tonight.
One win, pay the winner's price.
Leon Isaac Kennedy returns as Too Sweet.
You can't hurt me.
In Jama Panaka's Penitentiary 3.
Vinegar Syndrome, they did such an amazing job releasing parts 1 and 2. It just doesn't seem right that this 1987 Jama Panaka sequel hasn't been released on Blu-ray. It might have something to do with the fact that this is the only Penitentiary film that is a Canon Group production, who is also the distributor. I don't know. I don't know the reasons. I don't care. I just want it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's Jama Panaka. I've spoken on how much I love his work. MMA is one of my favorites. Welcome Home, Brother Charles, the Penitentiary movies. Street Wars. He has a lot of great films out there that everybody should watch. And Penitentiary 3 is him carrying on the story of Too Sweet, played by Leon Isaac Kennedy, who has been in prison since the first film and is forced to fight other inmates. The whole plot doesn't change. It's pretty much the same throughout all three movies. Mm-hmm. But Penitentiary 3, Panaka goes nuts with the characters and the antics in comparison to the first two. It's actually my favorite of the series because of how crazy it is. It's my favorite for because of the weird reasons.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want to make a cartoon out of the first one, it's part 3. You just go nuts with it. I want an archival commentary track from Panaka, like Vincent have in the first two. I'm sure he has one out there for Penitentiary 3. More interviews with the cast and crew. It's kind of hard to pick special features specific to this because of the releases of the first two. I kind of want more of the same because I never tire of it. This is another film that has an amazing soundtrack, you know, from Fred and Payne, the Gap Band. A lot of the songs that are featured on the release soundtrack were not used on the film at all. So like a breakdown of the song selection would be cool to listen to. But yeah, I just need that slip cover to fit in on my shelf with the other two. And if I could pick the spine, I would like it yellow with black, black lining.
Okay.
It would look so damn good.
Yeah.
You know me, I want all Jamal Fanaka on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I get it. Like and especially like having the complete collection, like my OCD sympathizes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That drives me nuts.
Yeah. Every time I see the new release, you know, announcement, I'm like, scroll down. Okay. Now I'll read through of them. I didn't see Penitentiary 3. I guess I'll read what you have.
Yeah. Someday, hopefully this will be what pushes it over the edge, Lance.
This is it. This is
now's the time.
Yeah. Feel it. I could feel it boiling.
It's coming.
Yeah. All right, Dustin, next pick from you.
Okay. So I went back and forth on bringing this one to the table, but I think I'll just do it. It'll be my kind of throwaway one. That's not that great.
No.
I've got Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys from 2004.
Yes.
Directed by the legend Ted Nicolau, reluctantly. Oh boy. I'm glad you're excited, Lance.
Doll Man, give me some Tim Thomerson on there.
The synopsis of this, a group of evil toy makers seek to use Andre Toulon's formula, now in the hands of his great nephew Robert, to give life to a line of killer toys that they plan to unleash on Christmas Eve. So somehow this is the only Puppet Master movie that hasn't made the jump to Blu-ray. And they kind of try to bury it and act like it's not a part of the franchise anymore. And I'm going to step up and defend this movie right now. Yes, it's a bad film. It knows it's a bad film. And it's just trying to have a fun time. And I think it does that in like spades. You've got Corey Feldman with weird, very unnatural sprayed on gray hair. And he is just like at 11 going crazy, chewing through every scene that he's in. You've got Vanessa Angel, and she is just like gorgeous as this incredibly seductive evil toy company executive. And if you're like me and you grew up watching the Weird Science TV series where she played Lisa, this film is great. It's like the next step in that and just loving her as an actress. The demonic toys are what you always want them to be. They're spouting one-liners every second they're on the screen. It's a full moon multiverse crossover, and it's also a cheesy Christmas movie. And while it has that like very hokey, very like childish, almost like family film movie vibe, at the same time, it's incredibly and very weirdly horny throughout the film. And I just think like if the Puppet Master movie that's like a clip show recap of the other films can get a Blu-ray, they're like sleeping on this one, man. I don't know. So for releases, it is streaming. It's easy to find. But if you want to own it for some reason like me, there's just the original DVD release, and that's starting to hit up to like $30 to $60 if you want to buy it. I would not pay that much for it. I will say that. Wait for the Blu-ray because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
The company, of course, Full Moon. They're the stewards of all of this, so it's got to be them. Special features. I would love for them to just get anybody that worked on this and get them to sit down and actually talk about it. I know Nicolau's in interviews saying that it was a mistake, so I feel like I don't know. Get a few of them together. Give them some beers. Just get them going about this.
There you go.
The other thing I think would be interesting is actually last year, this comprehensive book came out about the Puppet Master series written by Nat Brimmer. And he's this total super fan of the franchise. And the book is like very, very insightful if you care about these films at all. So I think it would be great if they could bring him in and have him kind of break down the film and talk about its place in the franchise and how it's kind of become forgotten.
I love it. There's also a Doll Man versus Demonic Toys movie too, and you know, any of that, yeah, Dustin, like you said, the Puppet Master movies and this whole universe, this whole crossover, which it expands across so many
right
films.
Yeah.
It's impressive. This is before the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Right. I love it all, man. It's so great.
Yeah. They're purposefully, you know, they're not great movies at all, but they are so damn endearing and fun to watch.
Full Moon Hell cinematic yeah. universe or whatever you want to call it.
Love it.
Well, very different direction here.
course correct us, please.
Sex film time, folks.
All right.
My next pick is Through the Looking Glass from 1976.
My name is Catherine Burgess. I'm a Vogue model and star of the new X-rated thriller, Through the Looking Glass. As I'm talking to you, I'm really dead.
Through the Looking Glass, Penthouse calls it a work of art, while Playboy says it's a landmark movie, proving that hardcore can be handled with class. Come through the looking glass and experience this year's most controversial motion picture, Through the Looking Glass, rated X.
This is directed by Jonas Middleton, starring Jamie Gillis and Kim Pope. And there's actually some Friday the 13th overlap with this film. The score for this was done by Harry Manfredini. And cinematography by Joe, I don't know how to pronounce Brazilian names. So let's just say Joe Fernandez. So he did cinematography for Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, as well as a bunch of other films like Children of the Corn, Invasion USA, and some other well-known sex films like The Devil and Miss Jones, Deep Throat, Memories Within, Miss Aggie. That last one has a Vinegar Syndrome release. So summary, this is a art house sex film, and it's a version of Alice in Wonderland. But, you know, don't lump this in with just your normal sex spoof. Like, this is not Lord of the Cock Rings. This gets I don't know if that's a real thing. I just made that up. It probably is.
It needs to be.
Yeah, okay. It definitely needs
Lance,
to be.
Lance, Google that. Lord of the Cock Rings.
Yeah, I'm going to Google search it real quick.
Okay. So
Google image search it.
So Through the Looking Glass gets very surreal and very dark, and it has themes of cyclical incest. It's got this fantastic ending where, you know, most films like this will have like an orgy at the very end of this. But this one takes place in this debaucherous hellscape that you get there through the mirror, and it's completely tinged in red. It's just... it's fantastic. It looks a lot like what are the little people called in Phantasm?
Oh, I don't.
Do they even have a name?
Yeah, they have a name.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. I think everyone just calls them Jawas, basically, because they look exactly like them. But it looks like that kind of red planet scape. But nice. It's like everyone just fucking. So it's fantastic. This is my favorite sex film. And of course, like the label to handle these types of films is Vinegar Syndrome. For extras, I'd want a commentary from Heather Drain. She's done commentaries, or at least co-commentaries on films like Malabimba, The Malicious Whore. I would add Sam Deegan. I know this is a favorite of hers as well, but I'm trying to spread these picks out a little bit, and I have her saved for my last pick. So
oh, nice.
I'll leave that. Yeah. And then other special feature, a video essay about Jamie Gillis and or Kim Pope by Ashley West from the Rialto Report. And that would be my dream, is to see this movie on Blu-ray.
Nice.
Through the Looking Glass, 1976.
Awesome.
All right, Lance.
So I did a quick search of Lord of the Cock Rings,
yes.
And it's a sexual spoof of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, where you follow Scrodo Baggins.
Excellent.
So ordered. Okay. Get that on Blu-ray. My next pick is Lord of the Cock Rings. I'm going to pull together a double feature for this one because they're meant to go together. You need one in order to better enjoy the other.
Oh, okay.
You know this.
I know. Yep.
This is The Demon Lover
yes.
with Demon Lover Diary.
The Demon Lover is a motion picture that defies the imagination, and it is the most gruesome of the horror films of the past decade.
How do we explain to the press? Two girls have been ripped apart as though they were attacked by wild animals.
The Demon Lover is a horror film beyond belief. even to the devil himself. It is the shocker of a lifetime.
So, nice. The Demon Lover, made in 1977, is this independently financed horror movie. We, you know, let me preface all this by saying this was one of Erica's picks for one of our Unsung Horrors episodes. And yeah, we both were trying to decide a double feature, and there was no denying that you have to have the documentary with the film release. So yeah, The Demon Lover, 1977, directed by Donald G. Jackson, who went on to direct All the Hell Comes to Frogtown movies and their sequels, and Jerry Jerry Yunkins, who went on to really do nothing. It was released on DVD by Televista in 2007, but the thought of having a Blu-ray with both these movies together, The Demon Lover Diary is an even longer runtime than the film itself, but the documentary just enhances the movie. The movie enhances the documentary. Yeah, the documentary is directed by Joel Dumont. I forgot how we pronounce
Joel,
her name.
Joel, I think.
Joel, since it is a woman. And she's, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like special features. Demon Lover Diary would act as the main special feature on Demon Lover Blu-ray, but I'd like to see more interviews with the cast and crew today, if possible. Mm-hmm. Even more archival interviews, comments from perhaps unused documentary footage. Howard the Duck co-creator Val Mayeriak was one of the leads.
Yep. Oh, wow.
And, you know, if it's out there, hearing more from, you know, the living cast and crew would be amazing. Same goes for, you know, the Demon Lover Diary documentary filmmakers, Jeff Kreens and Joel Dumont. Jeff Kreens was the cinematographer for The Demon Lover. I just want them both together on the shelf. They just heighten one another. The batshit crazy cast of characters, the filmmakers. I want to know more about Christmas Robbins. That name is perfect. And it's just a rare instance where such a silly little DIY film from the late 70s has a completely separate crew filming a documentary about the making of that movie.
Right.
It's just a weird, you know, moment in time. It doesn't happen.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. Because the documentary was released in 1980, Demon Lovers from 1977. So having them together on a shelf, I think it would be just the greatest gift to give like your best friends.
Or, yeah.
Even your enemies, like to piss them off.
Everyone.
Like, I don't know. I would love to see this out there. As far as who would release it, I didn't.
That's
make
Severin
note of that.
Would be good.
Yeah, Severin is my first idea.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Get it out there.
Love it.
Nice.
All right, Dustin, last pick.
All right, for my last one, I did a box set because I know you guys did a box set last year.
That's fine. I cheated in my last pick's box set too.
And I'm pitching this title. If anyone's listening and you want to steal it, go ahead. So this is the Ju-on Box of Grudges.
Nice.
Collecting four films directed by Takashi Shimizu from 2000 to 2003. I don't think he needs no introduction, and we probably all know the films, but the synopsis of the central main one, when someone dies in the grip of a powerful rage, a curse is born. Volunteer home care worker Rika is assigned to visit a family. She is cursed and chased by two vengeful fiends. Kayako, a woman brutally murdered by her husband and her son Toshio. Each person that lives in or visits this house winds up murdered or disappears. So when you think of like the great J-horrors that are out there, The Ring is up there, and then The Grudge has to be the other one. Mm-hmm. So I imagine this box set would compose the first four films. That's the two that were V-cinema, direct-to-video. You'll often see them called Ju-on The Curse. And then the two theatrical movies, which you often see just called Ju-on The Grudge. Mm-hmm. I think Arrow Video has to be the one to get this out, because they did the Ring box set. So it's like, I don't know how you can have the one and not the other.
Right.
There are releases of these on Blu-ray in Japan, and they even have a box set that is these four films, but there's no subtitles on them. So this is low hanging fruit for a Western release. As far as like special features you can include, I think you got to have the two shorts that he made, Katsumi and 444. They were both made for a TV anthology film, Gakko no Kaiden G. But they're kind of like the very root, like starting point of this entire idea of what the Grudge series is. Any interviews with Shimizu would be awesome. Anything with they could get him to give commentary, especially the early ones that were direct to video. I would always love to know more kind of about those. And I think it would be great if they could interview Takako Fuji or any archival stuff of her. She portrays Kayako in all the films. And I think like the deep horror of those movies is like all from her portrayal, and she does it all with like no words. It's all in movements and mannerisms, and it's just this like iconic horror character that's endured since it started. So any kind of love they can show her, I think, would be great.
Love it.
All right, so I half spoiled most of mine already. It is a box set. And nice. Like Dustin said, you anybody who puts this out, fucking feel free to steal my title for it too. mine is True Depravity, Cat 3 All-Stars, Simon Yam, and Anthony Wong. I've got four movies I want to go into this. So I know like Vinegar Syndrome and Unearthed Films have both sort of tapped into some of these Cat 3 films. Vinegar Syndrome just put out Ebola Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And then Unearthed has The Untold Story, which, you know, initially I thought, well, I just want to do an Anthony Wong focused one. But because Vinegar and Unearthed already have those individual ones, I was like, you know what, just ones that haven't gotten anything yet. So that's why I added Simon Yam in there. So two of these are Anthony Wong films. Two of these are Simon Yam films. All right. So first film I want in the box is A Day Without Policemen from 1993. Second one is Run and Kill from 1993, which has one of the most fantastic child deaths ever in a film. It legitimately made me consider putting it in my top four on Letterboxd, which I have not changed in since I got on Letterboxd. So, yeah. Third film, The Underground Banker, and last film, Taxi Hunter. Underground Banker from 94, Taxi Hunter from 1993. So the first two have Simon Yam. The last two have Anthony Wong in them. I don't think Unearthed Films has been doing box sets yet, but, you know, they...
Unearthed should give it a try.
They should. They should, you know, just bite the bullet, get in there. because Unearthed, actually, their release of The Untold Story has a really great documentary about Cat 3 films and an interview with Wong on there. So since they already have that, my special features for this, if Unearthed was going to do this, would be get some interviews with Yam, maybe just reuse the interview from Wong that's on the other one, directors, other crew, really anybody with each of these films. I already spoiled who I wanted to do commentaries on this, Sam Deegan. I know she loves Anthony Wong. She loves Cat 3 movies. Yeah. She can do one or all of these movies, whatever she's got the capacity for. We'll just leave it at that. and then I thought maybe a video essay or interview with Stefan Hammond. He's the co-author of More Sex, Better Zen, Faster Bullets, the Encyclopedia of Hong Kong Film, which Head Press put out in 2020. So yeah, box set, True Depravity. Give it to me. Give me all the kid kills. Give me all the fucking chopstick rape. Give me all the good stuff.
Chopstick.
Well, that's in Untold Story, so it actually wouldn't be in this.
Love it.
Lance, last pick.
Yeah, I did not get the memo, you know, to put together a box set. Sorry.
It's fine.
I did the double feature pick.
You got a double feature pick. Same thing. Multi-film pick.
I mean, I have been, you can tell I've been leaning hard into previous podcast picks. Mm-hmm. So Confessions of a Serial Killer, 1985.
Okay. Awesome.
Directed by John Dwyer, who he used a pseudonym, Mark Blair, as his credited name. And like I said, we covered this on a past episode, and I was really engrossed with its history when I was doing some research on the movie with the cast and crew involved. So I'd love to see all those details and interviews collected into one Blu-ray release. There's so much stuff that I found and we found when we were researching this, but I know there's so much more out there that I'd love to learn more about. And it all starts with lead actor Robert A. Burns, who plays the serial killer Daniel Ray Hawkins. Confessions is a fictionalized, thinly veiled account of the life and crimes of Henry Lee Lucas. And while Robert Burns didn't have much of an acting career, his main focus was art, prop work, set design, working on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes, Stuart Gordon's Reanimator, From Beyond. His work is brilliant. He alone, I think, deserves a documentary, which would make a great special feature for Confessions of a Serial Killer. How he got the part, because he was hired like as a casting director, but they were like, you're too weird to not have in the movie. We're giving you the lead. Yeah, and I mean, there are a ton of interviews out there with him. Maybe there's some sort of archival commentary for Confessions out there. I don't know, but I'd love to hear more from him if it's out there. And the production history of Confessions is really interesting as well, from the director John Dwyer using a pseudonym, which was urged by his agent at the time because he was working on a major project for Disney, which I still am not sure what it was. I think it's Captain Wrong, Captain Ron, because he co-wrote that. I want more information on that. Roger Corman became involved in the weak marketing and distribution of the film, shelving it for almost a decade, then releasing it on VHS to capitalize on the success of Silence of the Lambs, which explains that terrible poster art that's out there. So like a making of slash behind the story of Confessions of a Serial Killer would be super interesting as a special feature. There's also alternate versions of the films out there, especially due to some of the more violent graphic murders. So I'd like to collect all these deleted and cut scenes, pack them all together. And in 2016, I know the director, John Dwyer, took the rights back from Corman. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping he's looking for new distribution if it's not already in the works, fingers crossed. I guess maybe Shout Factory, the kind of nuts for Corman related stuff, anything with his name tied to it.
That's true.
I mean, it seems like I'm selecting Shout a lot on these, but I don't care who releases it. Just I want it on Blu-ray.
I know. We want all of these. We want all of these on Blu-ray.
All of them.
And all the ones from last year, too.
Yeah, all those, too. God, get to my first picks first, world. Come on. Anyway, I'd be happy with any of these getting a Blu-ray release. Finally, a lot of them deserve it. There's even way more out there, so I'm sure we'll do another one of these down the road. But before we get to that, we got to get to Lance's next pick.
Oh, yes, for the episode. So. Yes. Okay, so I noticed that we haven't picked a 60s horror this year yet.
That's true.
We had a few last year, had a lot of fun with them. So I kind of concentrated my pick on something older. Mm-hmm. And I'm going with The Strangler from 1964.
Oh, okay.
It's probably more of a thriller, crime thriller, but it definitely has creepy moments, which pushes it into the horror genre. It's about a depressed lab technician named Leo Kroll, played brilliantly by Victor Buono, who... while dealing with a sickly, possessive mother, he develops this fascination with collecting dolls and also murdering nurses. So it's not a spoiler that Leo is the Strangler, because it shows him murdering a woman within the first few minutes of the film. But the performances, the banter between Leo and the cops, and the dark yet humorous tones of the murders, it makes this a really quick, entertaining watch, and it's always fun to pop in an old black and white horror movie from time to time. So The Strangler, directed by Bert Topper, it's currently on Tubi, and it has 458 views on Letterboxd.
Dustin, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes. It was a delight. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell folks where they can find and follow you and Genre Exposure.
Okay, so you can find us on the web at genreexposure.com. We're on like every podcasting platform. Just look that up too. You can catch us on all the social medias at Genre Exposure. You can catch me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Hiro Tsukasa. I'm technically also on Twitter, but I mostly just interact through our Genre Exposure account. Oh, and I want to throw out too, every fourth episode, we do a listener-requested movie. So if there's a film you love, a film you champion, you want people talking about, reach out to us and send it to us.
That's a great idea.
No, stop it. We're not doing that. They're nicer than we are. Well, then I am. I know you would allow that. I'm not having it.
Yeah, we haven't been trolled yet, but we're eagerly awaiting for it.
Yeah. It's not so much like I worry about listeners. I worry about like, and this is mean, but like people who just made their own film and they're like, hey, because I've gotten a few of those requests. I know.
Well,
you guys,
I'm sure we would vet the picks and select. It's not just going to be one person.
No. Hard, fast, no. Just no.
You know, we've done one of those and it was actually one of my favorite films I saw that year. So
nice.
Stop it.
I guess we just won.
You're not, Dustin, you are not helping. Stop it.
God. So yeah, send Erica and Lance your movies.
Absolutely. Please. Fucking not. No. Thanks, everyone. We love you for listening. But
Erica's email will be in show notes.
We have very long list of potential movies to cover.
I love that idea, Dustin.
Jesus.
Excellent. Yeah, I love you guys. I think your show is awesome. Keep doing what you do.
Right. Thanks back at you. We love Genre Exposure. You know, I wish that Michael would embrace the child harm and death a little bit more, but you know, what are you going to do?
Well, Jason's there for that.
He is. I appreciate
and
it.
And we're slow to like adopt anything, but eventually we will start having guests and we'll definitely have you guys on to chat about some stuff.
Well, that'd be fun.
Awesome.
Love that. If you're not already, you can follow this podcast at Unsung Horrors on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. That took me a while. You can follow me at Hex Massacre on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter.
You can find me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at L Scheibe.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you back next episode for
The Strangler.
Night, y'all.
Bye.
Take care.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.